Welcome to the Dive into Reiki podcast. I'm Natalie, and together we will enjoy a series of conversations that explore the journey of Reiki practitioners and teachers from all lineages. 100% Reiki-focused stories, 100% human. Hi, and welcome to the first episode of the Dive into Reiki podcast of 2024. Today I have something a little bit different. It's the first episode of its kind in the podcast beyond being the first of the year. I have a very special guest, Patrick Suen, who is a six-time Iaido practitioner. And today we have the first time it's a non-Reiki practitioner. It's Iaido, it's martial art, it's the one I practice with swords. Welcome, Patrick. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Patrick is actually quite a high rank. That's a 6-degree black belt. And is the art of drawing the sword. He's also a 3rd-degree black belt in Kyudo, which is Japanese archery. And he's the head and instructor and founder of Tokushikai Canada in Toronto and Ottawa. He's been practicing martial arts for over 19 years. He's been a member of the Canadian Kendo Federation Board of Directors since 2014 and currently serving as the National Secretary. He's been an active contributor of the Canadian and international Iaido community, having co-founded many events and initiatives, including the CDN National Championships, the CKF Women's Iaido Seminar and Women in Budo Exhibition, the Team Canada Iaido and the Tokushikai Inside Look podcast. And he's a 12-time medalist in competition within the Americas. Mostly for me, Patrick Sensei is a great inspiration, both as a sensei and a human being. We have met at many seminars, and also we have this Tuesday mindfulness in martial art practices. I've learned a lot from you, Patrick. So I'm really, really grateful you're willing to come here on the podcast and talk a little bit about martial arts and how to use the body and your practice and all your wonderful wisdom. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Actually, when the pandemic hit and I started doing some of these online things, even before I started my podcast, I had started some conversations and wanted to just talk about how we think about our practice. And surprisingly, you and Parker Sensei were two of the first people to join, and you weren't even Canadian. So I was like very humbled to see you guys like find something of value with what I was organizing. And I think we've been great friends since then.
Thank you so much. And also, you obviously are not a Reiki practitioner. Your mom was a Reiki practitioner, but you don't know very much about it. But Qi and the concept of energy is very much part of martial arts. So there is a lot of interlooping. So I wanted to start a little bit with your background as a human and also how you came to martial arts and what Iaido is.
Okay, sure. So as you said, like I do have some experience with Qi, and that really started like at a very young age. I'm a Chinese Canadian. I grew up in Toronto, Canada. But I grew up like as a second generation immigrant. So my grandparents and my mom were still really into a lot of Chinese culture and a lot of the traditions. So from a child perspective, I was watching TV shows, comics, and reading books about Chinese history, especially martial arts history. I have a twin brother, so we used to play fight all the time as kids. And in those series, they talk a lot about qi or qi, and how it can be applied in martial arts, but also how like people interact with each other. I also can say that I kind of grew up on Dragon Ball comics. So all that kind of usage of qi into some kind of external force is very cool and something that I've always wanted to explore more and see where the reality is. But as we started getting older, as you said, my mom is into Reiki. She has also explored like Tai Chi and Qigong, and as kids, we kind of followed her along to all those places. So we got to practice a little bit of those exercises, activities as well. In terms of Iaido, I started, close to 20 years ago. It was right after university, and we wanted to do something. My brother and I wanted to do something that was a martial art, but not so commercial, I guess. It was a big time for like karate and judo, taekwondo, that kind of stuff, which was like as very popular amongst people. And growing up in a kind of non-diverse community, we didn't really want to kind of showcase, oh yeah, we're just one of those other kung fu fighting people. So we discovered Iaido and quickly fell in love with it and started practicing on from 2 times a week in our first 6 months to four times a week in the first year. Wow. And that continued on for quite a while. In terms of what Iaido is, I know you probably talked about your martial arts, your friends, and maybe on your podcast about that it's the art of drawing the sword. But to me, I've thought a lot more about what it means to me and what I want to share with my students and my community on what it is about. And it really is foundational on that piece of the term EI. So where does the term EI comes from? There's a saying that they is commonly believed. It comes from this Japanese saying, tsune ni ite, kyu ni awasu. So tsune ni ite means to be natural in the moment and really live and exist in a state of like heijoushin or commonality, like just something that is usual. You're not trying to fight. Kyu ni awasu means to rapidly respond. And that just means that you're training to be adaptable. It means that you're trying to be in a situation where at any moment in time, you can respond in the correct way, but you're not always at a state of readiness. You're not really trying to be, you're not kind of stressed or anxious or see things coming. You're just kind of being in the moment. So that's something that like I think about a lot in terms of martial arts, in terms of Iaido. I like to carry that forward. And so I found that it's taken, it's brought a lot to what I can do in my life, whether it's professionally or personally. And I hope to carry that to more people.
It's the first time I hear that, and it's very beautiful. And I think how useful it is for daily life as well. And in Reiki, we have something called the Reiki Precepts, which most of us just post on Instagram and don't pay attention to it. But it has at the beginning, just for today, and then do not anger, do not worry. But that just for today is about being present. As you say, be ready for everything. Just be present and then have the correct behavior. But the first step is just be here in mm-hmm. the moment. So that reminds me a little bit of what you're saying, right? That is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. Learning EI as well as Reiki with you today. I love that. And again, there is many, these Japanese practices have a lot of commonalities. I think you were talking about the hindrance in EI and martial arts and the Reiki precepts and Doshikai. They are very similar as well.
Oh, yeah. I remember that conversation. That was for another podcast.
Because it's like ours is like, do not anger, do not worry. And I think it was fear. The hindrances are very similar.
Yeah. Fear, doubt, confusion, and surprise. It's things that could come about at any point in time, whether it's in a martial setting, but even more common in our everyday life. So I think being kind of aware of these, as you say, precepts, practicing it within the environment and within the kind of conditions of a martial art, and then using that to transfer to your everyday life is super important. I think it's we have to talk about kind of how it transfers. And when we can have these conversations about different practices, but have the same kind of core, it's even more obvious how important it is.
Perfect. And when I started martial arts, the reason I started was because I was very still. My mind was perfectly still in Reiki practice when I was giving a session or in my meditation. And then I would go out in New York and I was a mess. And I was like, oh, what if I could have the stillness in movement, right? And part of it is I was never in my body. I was an intellectual, creative, like being in my body wasn't. And then I went into AI with that search because it was near my house. And then obviously when you are with a sword in your hands, you cannot be all over the place. You have to be focused and in your body. And that was a big thing. And one thing that did shock me in AI was repetition, right? I wanted to learn all the katas, all the movement very fast. I got bored very easily. And yet repetition is the core of martial arts. As Reiki practitioners, we learn 10 techniques and then we drop them and we'll move up levels. And that means a lot of Reiki practitioners have a very shallow understanding of the system. So talk to me a little bit about repetition, because you have been practicing for 20 years. And obviously you have achieved a deeper understanding that I have as a second degree black belt. So talk to me about repetition and the importance of it.
Yeah, there's so much we can talk about that. I think that the first thing that really comes to mind when you were saying about being in touch with the body, let's take it at a very scientific lens. So we talk about inside our brain. We're always thinking about stuff. Like, we're in this world where our mind is more valuable than what we can physically do, at least in our part of the world. And when we think about the brain, we think about neurons and connections between neurons. And to do that, you have to constantly kind of learn things. And then as more you do something, you know that there's these connections, these synapses that become stronger in between those neurons, which tell you that you're learning something and you're able to perform. What a lot of people don't really realize is that there are neurons inside our muscles as well. So we're not just talking about connections inside our mind that determine what we can think and what we can see and what we can comprehend and generate ideas and stuff like that. But there are connections that we can make between the brain and the body that can become stronger. And the same thing, like we were saying, with repetition. So a lot of our practice in martial arts talks about being able to, like we were saying in Iaido, respond in an instant. And the ability to respond is first triggered by your ability to think, like your mind deciding to send a signal to a muscle to act. And then there's the muscle itself to actually do work. So let's break that down into two things. There's the connection between the mind and the muscle. And then there's the ability of the muscle. We normally think about repetition, like going to the gym, of building that muscle. Yes, it's important to make it stronger. Yes, it's important to have it be able to act when you're calling it to act. And so I can like swing a sword faster, or I can close the distance between myself and my opponent faster. But when we're talking about responding to an instance, that has a connection between our mind and the muscle. So that's where repetition is not just about building that muscle in terms of what the body can do, but building that muscle in terms of what your mind wants the body to do. So in EI, we practice a few things, and I break that down into three things. There's what our body does. There's what our body does with the sword. And then there's what our body does with the sword in relation to an opponent. So let's start at just the body. The sword, the Japanese sword, we know it's curved, it's one-sided, and it's built in a way that is designed to work with the human body. All we have to do is raise our arms above our heads and then lower them, rotating at the shoulder without bending the elbows in any ways, and the sword will naturally cut. So if we are to use the sword properly, we first have to understand how the body moves properly. And like you're saying, in the modern world, we've lost touch with our bodies. That's why Iaido is, to me, is something really cool, because in trying to properly use and correctly use the Japanese sword, we have to correctly use our body. And that's something that like carries forward elsewhere. Like, I can use the sword well, but I can use my body anywhere. And I need to use my body anywhere. So that's the first piece. I need to learn how my body is designed to move, which we've lost touch with. We need to reawaken that part. And when that happens, the sword will move properly. Next, we need to be able to decide what is the technique we need to use with the sword. So now it's a connection with the mind, the body, and the sword. The sword, yes, it cuts a certain way, but when the opponent's coming, we either do a vertical cut, a horizontal cut, an angled cut, and all of that depends on the situation. So our ability to adapt our movements, to adapt the way we use the sword in any of those is also important. And to create that connection, we need repetition. I need to do a horizontal cut 100 times, 1,000 times. I need to do a vertical cut the same amount of times. And every single one of those angles from 360 degrees all the way around, you should be able to accurately perform the cut, because you never know. The opponent could be coming at a certain angle. They could be wearing a certain type of armor. When you're thinking about that situation, you need to be able to perform it in any one of those points. And then you have to repeat your motion in any of those points. So that's the body and the sword. And then last is body in relation to the opponent. The opponent has a certain intent. They're a certain size. They're a certain distance from you. They're a certain speed, certain strength. You need to be able to put yourself in a situation where you need to face that aggression. In a similar martial art to Iaido is Kendo. So that's like Japanese fencing. You have a bamboo sword, you have armor, and you actually fight someone. Someone's screaming at you, someone's lunging at you. That's a really great place for you to learn what it's like to be attacked, and also to attack someone that's not just standing there. In EI, we don't have that opportunity to to really experience it. So we have to create it. I would actually say for anyone to really be good at EI, you also have to do kendo. I did it for a little bit of time and I'll probably return to it when I have more time. But in the case that you can't actually spar, you need to create that opponent. You need to understand that when I'm wielding my body, when I'm wielding the sword, it could change. I could be someone really aggressive coming towards me. It could be someone that's running away. So how am I supposed to act in that situation? How do I respond? How do I move my body? How do I move the sword? And then how does my mind decide what is the best action to take? All of those things are, like, if you just heard me just now listening to those things, you probably already forgot the first thing I said. The only way to remember, the only way to get your body to do it, the only way to get your body to respond when your mind recognizes a certain situation you're in, a certain danger that you might be in, is to repeat, is to continue doing that motion over and over again. I'm sure you have other questions around that, but I'll just stop there.
I'm going to pause you because I think it's fantastic. It's funny, but I can hear my Reiki practitioner saying, I don't have a sword and I'm not going to fight anyone. But we have a ritual called Reishu or attunement in which we process a bunch of movements. And honestly, depending if you're big or small, we're going to have to do it, or if there are many people in the room. And a lot of people forget the movements. They get nervous. They trip on other people because they don't notice if that bottle of water is. And the only way to do that movement or that ritual with a very still mind is repetition. I see people looking at the nose, they get nervous. And the ultimate goal of that ritual is to become one with the universe, right? And the first step is to become one with your body. And when you said, like, those neurons, that connection through repetition, becoming one with your neurons, your muscles, strengthening that connection, for me, that made sense. And the only way to really do that ritual in the right state of mind and without doubt and without fears, and to be able to do it on someone who's huge, small, is to practice on repetition. So, and as you said, there is a science behind it. So when people are asking, why are you hearing this, Natalie? It's because this is repetition. It's martial arts. But if we want to be Reiki teachers, if we're doing Reiki sessions, the only way not to get confused when we're doing Reiki sessions, we're in a body, is through repetition. And yes, there is no sword, but it's the same principle. So I'm just doing a little bit of the link of what you're explaining to what we're doing. You have no idea how many Reiki masters have seen lost in the ritual of the step. Because suddenly they get a student who's like 6 feet tall instead of the usual petite woman they get to do the ritual, right? They're surprised. Or for example, there is a chair, they're missing a chair. They literally lose their bearings because the ritual is not ingrained in their bodies. They're doing it with the head. So I, on the contrary, I'm like fascinated with what you're saying, Patrick. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I think that last piece when you're saying when someone gets lost in the motion and they can't adapt to a situation, it's because they need to use their mind to adapt their motions, their movements, what they've learned to a new situation. And so that they don't have that capacity to just respond in the moment. When you're repeating something, you're transferring some of that thinking, some of that requirement of like cognitive load into your body. They talk about muscle memory, right? So your muscles know that when your brain says, I want to do something, it'll just do it. If I pick up a cup, I don't have to say, I need to lift my hand to a certain extent. I have to reach out to a certain extent. It just does it. But a lot of these practices that we do are not natural. They don't come to us. And in order to get it to come to us, we need to start practicing. When you do enough repetition, and when it's inside, when your muscles have that memory, it frees up your mind to do other stuff. It allows you to see more, to be aware of more, to think about new ideas, to think about new ways of performing something. So it's not even just like part of the value of repetition is to be able to do things without thinking. But think about that other side. When you're not thinking about that motion, what more can your mind be capable of doing? So like, I like to think about that piece too. It's like when we're talking about EI, it's reacting situations. I don't know, with Reiki becoming more attuned to not just your body, but your own surroundings, and then from your own surroundings to more of that world. How can you be attuned to it if you're always just constantly thinking about what is my next motion? What is my hand supposed to do? Where is it supposed to go? You can only be it when you free up that capacity.
And you said incredible. A lot of people think that ritual is just a ritual. And actually, the more I perform that ritual and the more, thanks to AI, the more mind-body connection there is, I realize, there is more, right? But for example, for my training with AI, we do something on those Tuesday we meet. We take the same movement and through repetition, we change stuff. And as you say, we freeze things and we play with it and we learn how to use repetition to get a deeper learning. And AI also, for example, we have the first kata mai that we learned, that series of movement. And you have been practicing that for 20 years, right? You have repeated that kata, I don't know, thousands of times?
Probably, yeah.
So is what you're saying, like you have repeated it, but then that you're getting nuances. So one thing I wanted to talk to you is exactly where you're taking it. Once you repeat, actually, it doesn't get boring. Some people tell me, like, Natalie, I've repeated that exercise you told me 300 times. I'm bored out of my mind. But you're opening the gate to something completely different. You're telling me that repetition can actually open the door to new discoveries. So I wanted you to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, okay. So let's just, at the base level, remember when I was saying how if you're trying to cut, you can do horizontal, you can vertical, you think about a cross, and yeah. You think of all the other angles in between. If you think about what are all the possible angles that you can practice cutting, it's infinite. There's always some new variation that you can apply. But when you first start out, you just don't have the ability to reach those angles. Like I could probably just do 90 degrees, 180 degrees, 45 degrees, and that's it. I can only do those well. As you become better at doing those other angles, you start looking for those nuances. Or like another example is if you're in archery, like originally I can just shoot within a 1 meter circle range. And as you get more and more accurate, more precise, you get to closer and closer to the bullseye. And the more you can get closer to that, the more you feel a sense of accomplishment, but also you feel like there's more I can tweak to get closer and closer. It's motivating in that sense. The other thing about when we're talking about the infinite amount of variations you can take is there's the spatial dimension, which we said talks about angles, and then there's the temporal dimension. When you think about it, every human being, every life form has only the same amount of time. So if you're talking about like the person, the garbage collector, the CEO, the nurse, the person serving your food at the counter, all of these are the same. Like humans only have a certain amount of time in day to do something. And yet when you start doing something more and more, when you start repeating something, when you start practicing and getting into the depth of like a kata like mai, you start realizing that within that time that I spend on that each motion and each technique, there are things that I can play with. Again, there's another infinite dimension from the physical plane to the temporal plane in which you can play with how you do things. In some cases, I want to speed up this part. In some cases, I want to slow down this part. And as you do that, you just realize that there's more things that can happen. If we're talking about AI, we're talking about opponents, and we're talking about an infinite amount of situations or scenarios in which an opponent can come to you. The scenario of Mai seems simple. There's a person sitting in front of you. They start showing some aggression towards you. You start pushing your sword towards them, trying to get them to back down. When they don't back down, you cut them across the eyes and then finish them off by doing a vertical cut. That's a simple scenario, but the person could be very different. The environment that you're sitting in could be very different. The speed at which they attack you can be very different. And when you start playing around with that, not only the space, but the timing of it, when you're thinking, oh, this person's a little more aggressive, so they'll be coming at me a little faster, so I have to respond faster. Oh, another person is a little more hesitant, and maybe he will back down. What do I do in that scenario? There's always there's an interaction between you and that potential opponent that has an infinite amount of potential scenarios, which again transfers into everyday life. Anytime I'm walking on the road, someone passes me, or I'm going up to the counter to order some food, it could happen in a lot of different ways. So your ability to just play around, to explore the variations that exist within the kata, can allow you to explore variations in any type of interaction between you and other human beings. So like for me, it's like immensely fascinating to just practice this one thing. And just being humble, you're never going to get it all. So try to just get as much as you can.
I love that. For me, one of the things I do, for example, we have this thing called hands-on healing, right? And we place our hands, and basically by placing our mind, it's a little bit of quantum physics, the energy goes where we are, or the attention, which means things move. And then healing happens. And people do this every day, but obviously there is a moment where you do this every day, people get bored and they drop. So I think this is very important, like especially what happens if I move my hands farther, closer, or what happens if I try to check where, like if I feel angry, will that alter the way I feel? Will I bring my worry? So we can play with that, but we're not teaching our students to do that. So I think what you're saying is very important. Like, can we play with space? Can we play with emotions? Can we remember someone that upset us in our, like in our day, and how does that feel, right? Can we feel our key changing? Can we feel those subtleties? Those are great ideas for all of us, because then it's not repetition anymore. The technique is the same, but the scenario is different. And that will bring a lot more juiciness and, a lot more richness to our practice.
Mm. Do you do group practices in Reiki?
We do some Reiki shares, less and less after the pandemic, sometimes online. But most of the community literally just practices the hand position. There is not, I think martial art has more richness in terms of perception of the body. It's almost like in Reiki, we allow the energy to do the healing. I think there is not so much participation of the person. I think there is a new, more Japanese style that is taking a little bit over there. Probably this is something I'm very interested in. So I'm sharing with my podcaster, and I think it's literally you, Parker Sensei, and the dojo that is taking me there, a more active participation and more presence of the body, to be honest. Reiki is very passive often. Even some of our clients just lay down and we place the hands. I'm even inviting my recipients, my clients, to actually be more active recipients as well.
Mm-hmm. What about like when you're practicing with other practitioners, when you're talking about these different motions, these different, I don't know if you call them techniques, do you do them as a group? Like in some yoga classes that you go to, like everyone's doing at the same time, there's one person that's leading it. Is that the case, or is it more of you figure out individually what you're working on?
I think it's always one person offering the other receiving. So it's more like by turns.
It's always paired.
It's paired.
But not more than that.
Or sometimes, so they're groups. So sometimes, for example, but it's not so much the norm. Sometimes a teacher will hold the space for the whole group, but it will probably be the teacher.
Mm.
But usually it's more pair and it's more hand-based. And okay. Then in more traditional Japanese styles, then the teacher may be able to hold the space for the whole group. But that would be an advanced teacher. It's a little bit different. And
yeah, what I'm trying to think about is like, there's a lot we can learn from doing these practices. And some of the things are carried down from like very olden times. But we don't know the reason for them. But we can only kind of guess at it. And we can do a lot of kind of scientific research to kind of get a sense of what it might be for. And we can leverage that, like leverage modern understanding and put that into the practice. One of the things that I've learned just from kind of being interested in a lot of different things is how militaries work. So we say we're a martial art, so there is a military aspect to it. And one of the key things about military, besides the discipline of always making your bed, of marching a certain way, of doing certain drills like those gun things where they're whipping it around and throwing it, all of those kind of practices in groups create a connection. I think that the human connection within a martial arts dojo is one of the most important things. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's all about going and practicing together, but Iaido is a solo art. Like we, there's no paired practice. There's some, but most of it is just individual. So what are ways that we can make a group feel like a group and feel that connection? And that is doing repetition of techniques of movements at the same time together in the same room. I feel like that's something that when you're doing it, when you feel that connection, if you think about in the military aspect, that's probably a reason. But if you think about just recreational stuff. So we all grew up like playing kids games. And one of them could be like, what's that one where you have two people, two groups on one side, one in a line, and you ask someone to run over and then they have to try to break through the arms. And then if they don't, they have to join you. Red Rover. Yeah, Red Rover, Red Sorry. Rover, bring someone over and they have to run across and do that. There's those kind of kids games. You think about doing a lot of choir when we're young and we're all singing the same thing, doing along the same line. There's like group dances and stuff like that. I think all of that is inherent in what it means to be human. And I think that being able to bring those kind of group common practices, repetitive practices, because yes, individualism is important and North American Western culture is very individualistic, but these traditions that come from the East and just generally, if you think about maybe even in Africa, the communities that do things together that are always build stronger bonds. And I think that part of the practice of doing stuff like this, instead of just individually, what do you feel like or what does works for you, but all doing the same thing is an important part of the practice.
And I will correct. So that does happen in Reiki shares. I was thinking like if there is a technique involving the group together and that not.
Oh, okay.
But in Reiki shares, we all share the same protocol. And then even though it's a self-practice, there is a feeling of coming together. Because also like that energy, when you go into that big mind space, there is no separation between people. Like you feel like it's a big kind of kokoro. You're all... So you know how at the beginning of the year we do the 1,000 cuts and there's a moment you feel like you're part of a bigger, you know, we're all together cutting. There is no separation. So when you practice together, it may be each individual doing the same technique, but in the Reiki shares, there is a sense of no separation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so, what do you have a version of that? You should bring something like that. Like what is the 1,000 cut version of Reiki that you can do in the new year to kind of...
So we do chanting. I think some, for example, with my mentor, sometimes he does 8 hours of chanting, different mantras that we have in Reiki, and we end up high as a kite.
Yes.
And that is a lot of fun. Yeah. So we have done that marathons of chanting, and sometimes it's just like Reiki mantras. And then sometimes we have a couple of Buddhists as well. And that's probably that's equivalent of the 1,000 cuts. Yeah. Mm. But the 1,000 cuts is very body, and chanting is also very body. But there is, I think, even it's funny, Reiki is very much about healing and bodies and session, but there is less embodiment. And for example,
that is very surprising to me.
Yeah. And I think it's a Western part of Reiki because I think I was just talking in a podcast of a lot of time there is this third eye and this desire for intuition and ascendant guides. And we're going to go to this ascended dimension where we're going to be better people. I think it's part of the Christian influence that, you know, the body is in the way of enlightenment versus the enlightenment happens in the body, which is closer to Japanese and Eastern philosophies. I think, honestly, it's more of a Western culture that the body is something not as, you know, the body stands in the way. You don't go to heaven in the body, if that makes sense.
Does Reiki have any tradition that's combined with other type of embodied arts? Or like, was it separate? Because like we were saying how Iaido and Kendo... somewhere down the line got separated. Iaido, Kendo, and in some cases, Judo or Jiu-Jitsu, because all of that was part of the samurai's kind of set of skill sets. And when it got separated, because one reason is just people don't have the time. One reason is people have like specific interests. But like you can really feel when someone does EI that doesn't understand what it means to have an opponent. And you can't fake it in some ways. You kind of have to feel it in some cases. So you lose something when you've lost a partner tradition or mirroring tradition. I'm just wondering if Reiki had any kind of...
You can feel it. So the guy who created EI, and I should not say guy, Mikaosu, he was actually from a samurai family. So the original meditations, there are even some of them that are very Qigong based, and you can see it was very embodied. And when it came, so what happened is like with the war, Second World War, like the only person who ended up having it in the US was a woman from Hawaii. And she decided when she was almost like dying, she taught it to white people, but it was at the same time that the New Age came into the 70s. And then they said like, oh yeah, we can mix this with chakras and third eyes and ascended guides and angels. And she took away a lot of the meditation and the hara parts, because she was like, these white people are not going to understand it. So that's where like it got separated and all the body part. And I think she assumed people were in their bodies because she was more of, like, she was of Japanese descent. She was Nisei. And I think it really hit that part where like people were really like, honestly, like taking drugs, LSD, and going to that whole crazy out of body experience. Mm-hmm. And that's when Reiki got very disembodied. You can feel when people are practicing, like the energy is very different. It's lovely. And they're very much into colors and visions. And when people are very embodied, the experience of having Reiki is a lot denser. It's a very different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both beautiful, but they're different experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. It seems like something when I was doing Qigong too, it was hard. Like we were learning. And yes, we talk about, do you feel that this kind of feeling in your hara? Do you feel it in your hands and your palms and stuff like that? And I'm like, my muscles are going to give, I'm going to keel over. I'm like sweating bullets and stuff like that. It's a big part of that practice.
But you're amazing. You move so well, but it's funny. So do you remember that day that we did the key experiment with the people at the dojo? And you mm-hmm. were like, you had crazy key sensibility. You were feeling like the ball of energy and everything. So you have that sensibility because you move. And the other thing I have to say, I saw, and I'm very dyslexic, Hakatanata sensei. Once mm-hmm. she performed and she, so for those of you, sometimes we have seminars in martial arts and some senseis, very advanced, 8-degree black belts, which is the equivalent of like the Reiki masters of all holy Reiki masters. They come and they perform from Japan for us. And she performed the first basic kata. And there was a space around her. She literally just contracted her lower belly, her hara. And she went into a space of energy that was only, the only other time I felt that density of energy around her was with my mentor, who had like one of the densest energy that I ever felt. And I was like, woo, she went in. So for breaking people to understand, she went in what we call attunement, which is super strong energy. And then when she literally hacked her enemy and she was like pointing the sword, like to make sure it was dead, she changed her energy from like unity with the room, taking over the room, to one on compassion. And you could feel the shift. And then her energy went back into her hara, her belly, poop. And it was such an experience because it was exactly the same energy of a Reiki attunement. So it is the same energy and it was as strong. So different practices, but they take you to the same level. So it's mm-hmm. the same unity of mind and body, very focused and with the same thing of becoming one with everything. It was very astounding for me.
Yeah, I really like that word attunement. The first thing that comes to mind when you say that is something that I also hear is when you're singing, you want to resonate. You want to not just have something come out of your throat, but you want to have a resonance inside your facial cavity to feel like that helps bring out the emotion. So I had a singing teacher once that was saying, you don't want to project. Projecting means you're just spitting out the sound. You want to resonate. You want to have your body be like something like a speaker that helps not just bring your voice through your mouth, but also through the rest of your body. So I think of that a lot in terms of what it means to project ki or seme or spirit elsewhere. It's not about just what's in your facial area. People like to just scrunch up their face or to stare menacingly at an opponent. But it's about how do you use your body? What's the opposite of an antenna? An antenna is, it's like an antenna. You're broadcasting everything through as much of your body as possible. If it's just your head, that's super small. Get into your upper body, get into your lower body, project it through the ground. I think someone that's fully connected to all parts of their body and then to the ground and then to the air around them is able to demonstrate much more of that key than someone that's always just in their minds, in their eyes, staring out into the distance.
And the same with Reiki people, they want to just use their hands. And that is such a small presence, right? And I think that is the beauty of it. Like in, as you say, in martial arts, it's through the eyes. Sometimes at the dojo, I laugh. They're making like very angry eyes. And I could tell them, like, you have the key of a mosquito. You don't scare me, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm no sensei. I'm a second degree. I'm like very like, that's not my job to say anything. And with Reiki people, it's the same. We try to do the presence with the hands and we don't know how to take place with the whole body. And I think martial arts is better at that. Is how do we just make our presence felt through every cell of our bodies? And then also not feel that separation with the space, right? because we can even expand like way beyond our bodies and like not feel so separate from the space around us and even expand further. And that's very interesting for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds very similar in that way. I think I've learned something too when we were talking about whether it's breathing or how you think about preparing for a Tai Chi and feeling like light kind of exude from all your pores and all parts of their body. Yeah, that's a very, I like that kind of concept and that thinking, and I've kind of tried to use it in my own practice too.
Yeah, it helps me. And I've been telling already some of my podcast listener and my patrons, I'm doing something called Seisa meditation now with a Shin Buddhist monk. There is a lot more like physical in terms of bringing the hara low and the pains of the lower stomach, the lower, whatever it's called today. Sorry, my head is not great with the stuff, but like really it's a very physical exhale towards the spine that is very interesting. And it sends then the energy moving down. So there are ways of breathing that really you feel that difference, and it makes you very stable as a mountain, but not rigid. So mm-hmm. there are ways to, and that's why when I think of repetition, people like being unwilling to do repetition. I started that meditation in August. I'm like, this is really hard and impossible and boring. And then I did the same thing and it started to change qualities. And then I did it once at the dojo in October and it gave that sensation. And then there is a cat I struggle and I still very bad. And Patrick Sensei here knows I struggle with martial arts. My number 11 was really bad. It's still bad, but it was the first time I actually, you know, moved through a kata that is very, you have to move very aggressively. And I actually had a little bit of like assertiveness in it. And I was doing that breathing. And then I kept repeating that breathing, that Seisa breathing. And by December, it kept changing the quality of it. And my body kept changing the way it moved. So it was the same breathing, but every time I kept repeating over the weeks, it kept changing. And that's why I find fascinating that sometimes in Reiki, we don't give the opportunity of our repetition. Yes, it's the same technique, but if you're repeating enough, the quality starts changing. It starts giving you different gifts. And that I think is fascinating as well. And you may mm-hmm. enjoy that Seisa meditation. I may forward you the information.
Okay, yeah, please.
It's kind of fun to do. Patrick Sensei, anything else? I think the last thing I would love to touch base is that concept that we have of Kiken Taichi, union of body, mind, and sword. And a little bit, what does it mean for you?
Mm.
As a personal, beyond martial arts, like as a person in your life, what does that mean for you?
Okay. So let's just define Kiken Taichi. Ki is what we're talking about here, and same ki as Reiki. Ken is the sword and Tai is your body. When we say Kiken Taichi, the most outer kind of shallow kind of definition of that is just that your body and your sword is moving as one with the intention of your motion. If you're doing something that has like an opponent like kendo, where you have someone that you can actually hit, it needs to show that, oh, I want to hit the head, my sword is touching the head, and my body has connected from the ground into the sword, into that person's head. So that's a very basic way of seeing whether or not someone has proper Kiken Taichi. So that's kind of the physical manifestation of it. How do we actually practice it ourselves? How do we get to that point? When I think about it, it's just that those three things that I mentioned earlier. You practice to, I'm going to use your word now, get attuned to your body, to understand how your body moves, how it's designed to move, how we've evolved to move, how we've lost touch in how we're supposed to move. We need to gain that back. I think in modern day, practice like Iaido, that's the key thing that we need to get is first get back in touch with our body. Because without being in touch with the body, without being able to move it in the way that it's designed, you will not be able to use the sword in the way that it's designed, because it's designed for our bodies. So once we have that practice in, then we have to understand what is the purpose of the sword, how was it designed to move, and how do we make it move in the way that we want it to based on how our body naturally moves. So like a key example of that would be, we have our up and down cut. So kiri oroshi, two hands above our heads, bringing it down. We can use gravity to bring the sword up, down. That's very simple. That's one of the most basic movements that we have to do. The opposite of that is kiri age from K kesagiri. So we have to bring the sword, rotate it around, and then start from the bottom of the right hip up across the body and then up the past the shoulder. That's a really hard motion for a lot of people to do, to maintain the right angle of the sword, to be able to bring the sword around so that it reaches the opponent and it goes upwards and flows in that direction, to not having to rotate our shoulders or our bodies or our spine too much, to not break our wrists in a certain way. That's a really hard practice to do. And yet it's a legitimate cut. It's something that we have to learn and to practice in. So we have to be able to, we know the sword can do that. Our body doesn't naturally want to do that. So the Ken and Tai part is working on these things, working on the hard things. As much as like we like to think of, oh, I'm going to learn something, the easy things, oh, I've got it. You want to look for the things that are hard, because that's what's really going to make you understand what is it that I need to do with my body and the sword. The last piece, like we were saying, body, how you use the sword, is the opponent piece, and thinking about what is the intention there. We had different senseis that kind of had brought different perspectives on what EI is about. One is, oh, it's a way to defeat an opponent before they're ready to be defeated. And another perspective is to be able to protect your loved ones in the case that someone's being attacked. So it's more a defensive kind of reason for it. So when you can put your mind into what is my purpose of the practice? What is the opponent trying to do? What am I trying to protect? Then you can start practicing to connect your body, your mind, and your ki in that sense. So what does that mean? What does it mean to tie your ki? I don't really quite know. Like, even though it's 20 years in, I can't say that I'm using ki in any way. But I know that if I'm in tune with my body, if I'm letting the sword do what it's designed to do in the way that my body is designed to move, and I also know that I'm doing it in a specific situation where the opponent is doing something, where there's a interaction between me and someone else, then ki will naturally come out. We have a senseis that talk about, oh, at this level, you need to show this, at this level, you need to show this. I don't worry about what I need to show. I worry about the situation, like the here and now, the current moment that I'm doing that motion, doing that movement. If I can be completely in that moment, in my body, in how I'm using the sword, in my mind on what the situation is, then ki will naturally kind of show up. And so, long-winded answer back to how it applies to everyday life, it's the exact same thing. Like, everything in life is your body in space somewhere, your mind deciding what action you want to take, and some kind of interaction between you and another living thing. So if we can be in the moment, if we can be in a state where our body is healthy, is moving in the way that it wants to move, it's the way that it's evolved to move, if our mind is in a state that we're open to whatever the interaction can give, and if we're trained such that we can provide value to our counterparts, then naturally you will demonstrate strong ki.
I won't add to that. It was beautiful. Thank you so much. And I think so, okay, I will add to one thing. I love that you say work through the hard parts, which a lot of times in Reiki, we just want to go through the happy parts and then we kind of want to skip the bad parts, and which is when the healing happens. So thank you for saying that. And the rest is just perfect. I'm not going to add. And it applies to Reiki so well. And yes. Thank you so, so much. First of all, I really enjoyed doing my first drawing of martial arts and Reiki. It's the first ever I've done. And thank you for your time. I really appreciate you being open to this. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners do. And thank you for always being an inspiration to me beyond the Reiki, also in martial arts. Really, thank you.
Thank you for everything that you do, hosting these conversations. We need to have more of these, especially in this time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Dive into Reiki podcast. You can read a full transcript of today's interview at diveintoreiki.com/blog. If you found this episode helpful, please hit the subscribe button, leave me a review, or just share it with your friends. It makes all the difference. Thank you. Gracias. Merci.